This is Health First with Kathy Hart, available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We are back with Kathleen Trotter. She's the author of Your Future Fittest Self, as well as Finding Your Fit. And we've been talking about exercise and food to find that fitness. So welcome back. We were talking about the nutrition part of it. What's one thing people don't get enough of in their journey on being to get to really be their fittest self? How do you fuel up for that?
You know, I think the thing that people don't do enough of, and it's going to sound like I'm not answering your question, but I really think it is the getting off of the shame bandwagon. Like, I think the problem with food is that for most people, it's really connected to a lot of shame. I know that it used to be for me. Like, I grew up really unhealthy and unhappy, overweight. And when I ate something that wasn't good, or I considered quote-unquote bad, I would shame spiral. I was just like, I did one bad thing, so I was like, well, I might as well do another and another and another. And now I'm really trying to work with myself with this idea that every experience, like every time you eat anything, it's just data. Like, it's not good or bad. It's something you could have guilt over, a food choice, but you don't want to have shame. So meaning if you have a cookie, right, if you think, oh, okay, well, I shouldn't have eaten that cookie. It didn't make me feel good. You know, now I'm going to have an energy spike and then an energy dip. Then you can say, okay, so next time I have to make sure I have a healthy lunch so I don't need that cookie, or, you know, I have a lot of water so I don't feel dehydrated, or I get more sleep so I don't need the cookie. So you learn from that experience. Like, you can say, like, that was not an ideal behavior. But when you start to connect it to shame, which is what most people do, it's like, oh, I had a cookie. Well, I must be lazy. I must not be able to do this whole dieting thing. I'm going to fail. I might, why even try? Like, I'm just destined to be unhealthy for the rest of my life. And the problem with that is that you shame spiral, then you just make other unhealthy choices. And then it feels like you can never, ever become your fittest future self. So I think the thing that most of us don't get enough of is just kind growth mindset talk when it comes to our food. And I think that the problem with labeling things good and bad is that, you know, you have one quote-unquote bad thing and it just makes you want to go down that shame spiral. But if you can understand, like, I like to live more with what I call my love it rule. So I'm allowed to have things that are slightly less healthy, but I just have to love it. Like, I'm not going to eat crap that I don't love. Like, I don't like Doritos, so I'm not going to eat that. But I love chocolate, so I'm going to have a couple pieces of something that I love. And then when I do have food choices that I'm not as proud of, I'm just trying to learn from that experience. And that sort of self-learning and self-growth and that awareness.
So they're bringing you joy rather than shame, too.
Exactly.
Like, you stop and just enjoy the moment.
And it's just so much easier to stay on your health horse when you feel like, okay, this is a process, it's a learning experience, and it's a growth opportunity versus an experience to make me feel like I'm a less than good human being. Like, you know, being a fittest version of you, it's not about creating this, like, whole new you or, you know, dumping who you are now. It's about slowly trending in the right direction and slowly becoming a fitter future you through these small changes. And part of that really is learning to lean into, you know, being a roommate in your head that you actually like. You know?
Yeah. So, how important is the gut health and the glycemic index on this path to your fittest self?
Oh, I like that question. So both are important. You know, I think the gut health question sort of depends on where you are in the spectrum. So if you have something like celiac, then obviously gut health is going to be even more critical, right? I think for everybody else, it's one entranceway into better health. And, you know, I always say to clients that there's many roads into health. But I don't like people to get caught up in sort of quote-unquote fad. That you know, gut health is not that it's a fad, but it is a new thing that we're all sort of aware of. And I think the thing is that a lot of us sort of try to optimize the margins of our health before we get the base, right? It's like, you know, the house is on fire and we're trying to, like, mow the lawn. You know, the thing is, is that, so for most people, if you can get the basics down, like if you can drink more water, if you can sleep more, if you can stop eating when you're full, if you can have lots of foods with high fiber, then those things are actually going to positively affect your gut health, right? And if you're eating foods like vegetables and proteins and healthy fats, those are fairly low to moderate glycemic index foods anyway. So So for most people, I think for most people, we look for complexity and excitement when really what we need is consistency over complexity. But that being said, those two things are absolutely important. And if you've sort of optimized your margins, like if you're drinking more water and you're eating fresh fruits and vegetables and you're still feeling like you're having some energy, sugar ups and downs, well, then glycemic index might be something to look into because, the foods lower and mid glycemic index are going to have a better insulin reaction in your body, and then you're going to have more level energy, right? Or, if you're eating really well, but you're still having an upset tummy or your mood is still off, then, narrowing in on your gut health might be a really key thing. But again, it sort of just depends on you and your body, and it depends on if your gut health is out of whack. Like if your gut health, your digestive, probiotic stuff is good, if you eat a lot of fermented foods, all that stuff, then you won't have it. You probably don't have a digestive issue, and therefore narrowing in on it is not going to give you much bang for your buck, right? So again, it's about kind of knowing who you are and your triggers and how you live your life already to know what's going to make the biggest impact.
So in your book, in the nutrition mix, it's all foods that you can understand, like broccoli.
Yeah, well, how the nutrition segment works is it starts by having a questionnaire of your goals and like just different questions to ask yourself. Like, are you being aware of food? Are you mindlessly eating? Here are some sort of the Captain Obvious approach to health. Here are some questions to ask yourself. Like, what's a linchpin food habit, for example? Like, do you know if you always have like a cookie, does that lead to sort of 7 more cookies and 4 glasses of wine, right? So it starts with some questions and just some guiding principles and how we all self-sabotage. And then it actually breaks down about 20 different diets. We'll say like, okay, so here's the Mediterranean diet. Here's the pros and the cons. Mm-hmm. Here's like a vegetarian diet. Here's the pros and the cons. So it's less about giving specific foods and more about trying to understand how you can create a unique program based on you, because we're all unique individuals, right? And so this idea that you can find a program in the store that's going to be, quote, perfect for you, that's this generic program, doesn't really work. It also just doesn't make sense.
And is that what you mean by rethinking fit, that you really just have to ponder all of this and create your own?
Yeah, so the rethinking fit, there's actually a whole chapter in the book, and that's what the book starts out with. And the rethinking fit is just rethinking what fit looks like on you, which it kind of sounds like a silly thing to say, because it's like, well, fit is fit. Like, why would you have to rethink it? But when you really break it down, a lot of us think of fit as, the person in the magazine or the person with the six-pack abs who drinks a smoothie every day and who's dedicated to their health. And when you think about fit in that way, often it's like self-sabotaging, because you're like, well, that's not me. Like, why would I want to do that? I can't be that, so I might as well not even start. So the concept of rethinking fit is trying to decide, like, what fit looks like on you, right? Mm-hmm. So as I said, my dad's fit is being fit enough to play hockey. So he does stretching and strength stuff so he can play hockey. My fit is to be able to run. I have a lot of clients that their fit is, to get down and off the ground with their grandkids. I have some of my clients who are athletes, so they're fit for their being a swimmer or their sport. But your fit is going to change as you get older. It's going to change depending on, the years, where you are in your time in your life. So for me, in my 20s, I was an Ironman athlete, and, I trained 20 hours a week, and that meant I had to eat a lot of food, and my fit was very specific to that. And then I've gotten older. I'm in my 30s. I own a studio now. I'm writing books. So my fit is like, I want to have energy for my clients and be positive. And so it's a different thing. I work out like, one-fifth as much as I did in my 20s. I have to therefore eat less, different foods, So it's,
Is daily exercise actually vital to our success, and or would a few times a week do it?
Again, I love your questions. I think the thing is that we have to make sure that we set realistic goals. So how much exercise you do will depend on your goals. And if you tell yourself that you have to exercise, an hour a day, again, most of us sort of say, well, screw that, I can't do that. So my viewpoint is that something is always better than nothing. Mm-hmm. And make it realistic, make it something that you can do, because even 10, 20 minutes a day adds up over a week. And if you start with 10, 20 minutes, it's sort of that weigh in, because often you do a little bit and you're like, oh, this feels pretty good. So then you do a little bit more and more and more. And then you're sort of looking for ways to be active with yourself and with your family and that kind of stuff. So I'm all about making it accessible as opposed to something that's scary and overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you've covered it for everyone at any age, that we can become a little bit fitter, whether we're in our 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. This is applicable to everyone.
Yeah, and I try because, you know, as I said earlier, I was a really unhealthy, unfit teenager. And one of the reasons why I was unfit for so long is that getting fit just felt so overwhelming. And through my process, I've figured out that, you know, being active can be empowering, can be energizing. And I want that for as many people as I can help inspire, because it really has created a life for me that I love. And I'm a very different version of Kathleen than I was when I was 15, 16, 17, you know, when I was lying together at gym class and sneaking food. And I just had so much shame about my body and my choices. And I didn't like being in my own skin. And I to like being in their skin.
Kathleen, how can people find more about your work, your books, your webpage? Can you tell them how to find you?
Absolutely. So my webpage is KathleenTrotto.com, and you can go there. You can always get hold of me through the website, email me. And I have things like the books I'm reading on there, and, you know, things that give me joy. And then I'm Kathleen Trotto Fitness on Instagram and K Trotto Fitness on Twitter. And Kathleen Trotto on Facebook.
Okay, thanks so much for being on the show today, and thank you very much.
My absolute pleasure.
It's great. We're going to get copies of your books. It was fantastic.
Perfect.
We're just going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have our second half.